And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 154.
154. Moving on up.
Like the Jeffersons.
That's right.
Welcome to Black and a Half. My name is Silas Lindenstein.
My name is Samantha Rund.
And this is Welcome to Black and a Half, the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably. Yeah. It's a comedy podcast, but you know what? So is The Daily Show. But The Daily Show, well, it's not a podcast. We're a comedy show like them. But sometimes you get serious and you get political. And today's episode, we have our first mayoral.
Yep.
So it's a weird word suddenly. I was like, mayoral? Mayoral candidate Andrew Grant Houston is in the house on the podcast. He's they're interviewing. We do an extensive interview, ask some stuff, find out where Andrew came from, what brought them to Seattle, and
what are his intentions with our city?
What are your intentions with my city?
That's right.
Good sir. Then we had some hard-hitting questions from listeners and from just general fans that we asked. So this is probably be the toughest interview until 60 minutes, Andrew, to be honest.
Oh boy.
We prepped you.
Oh yeah, we're so frightening.
We prepped you for the 60 minutes extravaganzas.
It was a gauntlet.
So you get to get a lot of answers. Maybe they'll sway your vote. Maybe you'll send it. I don't know. Go check out their website. We'll have it on the Black and a Half page, and you can decide if you want to donate to the to the campaign or tell a friend to tell a friend to donate. And maybe this started it all. Maybe this launches the whole the Black and a Half launches the success of this campaign. Opens to the masses. People from
next step.
People from all over the country will you know what? We're not gonna pay our Patreon this month to the Black and a Half. We're gonna send that Patreon money over to Andrew Grant Houston so he can be win the mayor.
Could happen. Or you know what? They could also choose to still support Black
That's
and a
true.
Half and maybe
you could
not
do that.
Buy that extra Twinkie.
Yeah.
You know? Maybe
folks is still
good.
Buying?
Folks is good.
I think you just labeled
our
roller.
Listeners as Twinkie eaters.
You know, I used to love a good Twinkie back in the day.
Like
when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Now if I eat one, it makes
me disgusting.
Sick. It tastes fake. But back in the day, yum, yum.
I loved those, the cupcakes, the Hostess cupcakes.
Oh.
Chocolate.
That were filled with the little
with that
cream inside
cream.
Or whatever.
Oh, I loved those. And I got
I love the little, was it Little Debbie, the two?
Yeah.
The two oatmeal cookies with the cream inside.
Those ones. I was a Nutty Bar person.
Peanut
butter and the chocolate.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I tell
now
you,
all that stuff, it just tastes like super fake to me.
The worst part is growing up with those things, loving them, and then thinking I'm going to share that joy with my child and go you're going to hear, I'm going to let you have a Hostess cupcake for the first time. We're going to eat it together and be biting into it and going, oh my God, what is this?
Yeah, right?
Oh, crap. I learned how to eat.
My childhood was a lie.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, you learn how to eat and then you're like, oh, nothing's good. But they're still like, oh, this is cool. It's all sugar. Yeah.
Oh, whilst we are on the topic of sweets and chocolate and whatnot, just a reminder, everybody, look for the Fair Trade chocolate.
What?
I just saw another reminder post that if you're not doing Fair Trade chocolate, more likely than not, you are actually supporting child slavery if it's not fair trade chocolate. So be
What'd
careful
you
when you're getting your chocolate. What'd you say?
Well, you read the Nestle article. You read half of it.
I did, but you know what? I'd actually seen that before,
read
too.
Read half of it.
Half of it?
Yeah.
No, I didn't read any of it. I just remembered. Don't point at me like that. You let me finish, Silas. Don't point
article.
In my face.
Read the article.
Look at my hand. I'm telling you that I'd seen that about chocolate. I'd heard that about chocolate before, about making sure to get fair trade chocolate. It's something I've seen before. So I didn't read the article because I'd remember hearing something about it before.
There you go.
I encourage you to read the article to get
better. Why don't you just tell me if I'm wrong so everybody can hear and laugh at me together?
It's complicated. It's not a straight. It's like.
It's complicated.
It's not.
That doesn't mean
they're
no.
Not like saying, they're not saying. They're saying, like, well, it's going to raise. It's an argument about how people should be. How they should be fined for using. When it's found out that they're using. Slave labor has come through it. It's not like Nestle's like saying, no, we totally want to use slave labor. Like there's some punishment set up and they don't like way the Australian government is fining people. It's more
I just feel like what's the difference if you can't have an option of buying fair trade chocolate, just buy fair trade chocolate. Like I'm not going to go and look at the chocolate cake at the store and be like, can you tell me if it's fair trade and demand the list of ingredients? But I'm saying if I'm at the store and I see two candy bars and one of them says fair trade, why don't I just get the fair trade one? Right?
I guess.
Yep.
I don't know. Blood chocolate. That's what it is. It used to be blood diamonds. Now it's blood chocolate. No chocolate's clean. It's disappointing that you can't grow chocolate in the U.S., right?
I don't know. I can't barely
right?
grow anything.
We don't have the right
My
weather,
basil plant
right?
just died. I'm so disappointed.
Well, yes. We don't have the same... climate.
Yeah, but, we can't fake it for some reason. I don't know.
We
have seedless watermelons, but we can't make our own chocolate.
Why did you have to bring up watermelons? Now I want
I'm racist.
I want like a delicious watermelon mint salad.
Oh, I make a good one. Have you had mine, Samantha?
No, can you make me one?
I could. I can I'll mask up and I'll make it and I'll bring it to you.
Some goat cheese.
That'd be delightful.
As soon as the summer hits. Oh, I do
like goat cheese.
Yes. I don't do it in the one that I do, but I have had that and I love it. Oh,
so
foodie. Andrew, we're going to have to go eat when this thing ends because you just sound like good foodie. You know,
right.
Food.
Yeah. At your celebration.
At your party.
Your celebration party. Please remember to invite us.
Yeah.
And we'll help you.
I can do that.
I'll get vaccinated next week so I can go. All right, folks, hey, as always, if you enjoyed the show, if this helped you in any way understand anything about the world or just brought a little bit of entertainment, if you can go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review, leave a comment, it would help us out greatly. And if you really like the show, you can go to patreon.com/black-and-a-half and become a Patreon member by joining the League of Extraordinary Listeners for as little as $1. Or you can upgrade yourself and become an Inner Circle member and like Tara Widener, Keith Nagel, Stefan Ward. Be like one of them, you know? Be bosses of the podcast. That's it. And today's episode is always brought to you by our sister podcast, You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein. Hey, that's me. If you are anywhere in the nation, and you're looking to buy a home, go to yourbuyingahome.com, subscribe there, or subscribe wherever you're listening to this show. And I take you step by step on how to buy a home and talk about current conditions. And I can even connect you with a realtor anywhere in the country that you can trust. Because I vet them or I connect with them. Or, and of course, if you're in the Seattle, Washington area, I can help you out. But other than that... listen to that podcast. And it's also brought to you by
another podcast. Oh my goodness. Beyond Technique with me, Samantha Ron. That one is going to center more around performance and the ways that it can help improve our lives, whether or not you're a performer. And then of course, with Beyond Technique Coaching. So if you're looking for a coach to help you use performance skills to help you bring more of your full self and voice, body, and mind so you can be a better communicator and use those skills to improve your life on or off the stage, in your relationships, job interviews, auditions, all of that good stuff. Public speaking, of course, you can always reach me at beyondtechniquecoaching@gmail.com.
And that's those podcasts. But this is this one. So open your hearts and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 154. Seattle, we have a solution. Andrew Grant Houston.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
Stand by to receive our transmission.
Stand by. Join us.
We've got a good fan base, so I think it'll be high quality questions. Besides our cutting edge journalism that we got. Anyway, I wanted to...
Yeah, what station? Just kidding. I'm kidding. Journalism, what station you tuned into. Very.
At one point, you know, Samantha, journalism was going to be my almost major, I think.
Your almost major?
Yeah, before I discovered theater. Like, oh, wow. I was in a, you know, I took a poli-sci class, and I would like the... I think I wanted to delve into policy and stuff. So that's why I love Daily Show and this idea of getting mayoral candidates on here. I think, oh, I would love to turn a black and a half direction here. but let me, I wanted to tell you today though, before we get to that, I had my first COVID test today.
Oh, it was your very first test?
My very first. I haven't done one. Now,
up the nose,
Andrew, it wasn't because I wasn't exposed or I have no illness, but I'm doing an acting gig this weekend, and to get a clean set, they need us to go get tested days before, so I don't know how good it does now, but it's very testable.
And they please said, lean back and don't move.
They said, it'll feel like, some people say like maybe they just had some wasabi a little up the nose or a little, I was like, oh, you forgot to mention that wasabi on top of a rusty fucking needle or something. Like that was,
it did not feel like wasabi to me.
That hurt. Like, I mean, it didn't hurt enough for me to scream. I could stay still. But that was not pleasant, and I had to have him wait to do the next other side, and I was like, really, a second side? I don't know how you get people to do the second. I was like, this is horrible. That was absolutely a horrible thing. I can't believe, and I think it's hard to describe. I think that's why I've heard people say like, oh yeah, that's not, oh, it was rough.
Yeah.
Because they don't know how to.
It's like different for different people too, depending on like the shape of their nose or something.
Oh yeah, I took decongestant before I went to make sure.
Yeah, because the other one, it didn't bother him nearly as much as it bothered me.
Really?
Yeah, and like I've had to get one twice. I think they were both for acting things before, you know,
yeah,
a couple months back. But I tell you, after that. After that second one, now I'm like, is the job worth it to get the test? I'm like, oh, is it worth like those moments of pain?
If I have another one, I'm going to have to write the dollar amount that I'm getting paid and put it on my windshield.
Right. Exactly. I mean, after the test, it's like never again. But I mean, realistically, I you know, it's not.
Oh,
like
I don't know. If they said like, hey, it's background work, you need a COVID test. Like, no, no, thanks. No, not doing it.
Well. Right, but I mean, we typically don't do.
We don't do background.
Well, I mean, you know, you heard me. I was telling you, like, I did background work a couple months ago. That was the last one I got the COVID test for. And to be honest, I think that's why I was like thinking, is it worth it? If I were doing a movie or a TV show, I wouldn't be questioning it. But you know, for the back, I was like, I got nothing going on. Why not? They were having safety protocols, but.
Yeah, now it's harder for me to do that stuff just because so many with the family. Oh, I should say it's hard to say no because I can just get away from the family. It's hard. Oh. Andrew, have you ever done background? Like, have you ever done acting work at all?
Not in that sense.
Okay.
Like I did musicals when I was in high school because I was in choir all through middle school and high school.
Okay.
And so I had that experience of just like acting as background during scenes, but not for anything that was recorded really.
Okay. Well,
did you have a favorite musical that you were in or that you?
Ooh, okay. Oklahoma. As much as really? I don't like the state because I'm actually from Texas, it's
you don't have to be from Texas to not like the state of everyone from Seattle. Well, all sports fans hate Oklahoma.
That too.
What was that?
Oh yeah. Actually, that's my one connection to the former Supersonics is Kevin Durant, who like was coming up here before they got moved, was from the University of Texas. So he's an alumni.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man. I don't know how I'd feel about that. Like, first you're like, okay, you're from, okay, so he's from Texas, right? So he, well, I don't know where he originally is from, but it's like, oh, it's a nice, I mean, weather, yeah, it's hot, but it's like, nah. And then you're like drafted and you're going to go to Seattle and you're just hearing from everybody. It rains all the time. And then they say, okay, we're moving it to Oklahoma. You're like, ew, well, you got to. What is the?
I don't know. I've never been to Oklahoma. I have nothing to gauge it. Nothing to. I've.
How about every civil rights movie I've ever seen? That's Arkansas, probably.
Yeah, I was like, I don't really have much reference for Oklahoma.
No, I just
probably a little less black and a little more hap. There you go.
Yeah. What what do you think of the weather difference? Are you acclimated to Seattle? Then, Andrew.
Oh yeah, no. Within 3 or 4 months of moving here, I was already getting used to wearing shorts and it being like 45, 46 outside. I thought like, oh yeah, this is fun.
Okay. Do you miss the humid? I don't know, what is it? What do you miss the?
No, actually, heat? I do miss some of the humidity only because during here in the winter, my hair and scalp is just still not used to this. It's just way too dry. And so hair care is really intense for like December through about now. So now it's just, I feel like my hair is finally getting back to a little bit of normalcy, but it gets really dry up here.
Where in Texas? Did he ask?
So I was born in San Antonio and I moved around kind of a bunch like around that area, but essentially central and south Texas.
Do you have references points, Samantha?
Well, I was just thinking of when you were talking about the humidity, I didn't realize that was like humid in like all of Texas.
I don't know if it is. Sure. I think.
But you know,
probably
because you're saying how dry it is.
Kind of like pretty much like everything from like the like interstate, like it's weird how our interstate kind of tracks the line between what becomes West Texas and desert, and then everything to the east of that is like fairly mild until you get to Houston. Now Houston and then the rest of the Gulf, that is humid. That is another level of humidity that is just like wearing a raincoat of just sweat.
I think I tend to think of the whole South, I guess not the North, the Southwest, no. But I tend to think of a lot of the South as really humid from my experiences there. Because I think like Georgia and probably Alabama, driving through in the summer. Why?
Mm-hmm. Why?
I don't know. not my choice.
Yeah, that's more like the Gulf. And then if you get a little bit drier than that, more like Austin, San Antonio.
Okay. And so how long have you been here in Seattle?
So I have been up in Seattle since the end of 2016. So I actually moved here at the end of November. So like a couple weeks after that election in 2016. Oh, yeah. You know, there was a little election.
Notable.
Oh, yeah.
Notable election.
Just a wee little one.
Big asterisk next to it in the following years.
Yep.
What drew you to Seattle?
So I was actually working in city planning right before that, and I'm an architect, but I was looking to get back into architecture and I really wanted to work on apartments and housing. And Seattle was one of the few places that was actually building housing. So before then, I had lived in Austin. Yeah. Compared to a lot of other places in the United States, for sure. Before then, I had lived in Austin for just shy of 10 years and had gone to school there, University of Texas, like I talked about. But I knew if I did move when I did, that I probably wasn't ever going to leave Texas. And I wanted to get some more perspective and also be in a city that I felt like, one, had a really great transit system, and two, also had a connection to the outdoors, similar to Austin. And so came up here, had some interviews that went pretty well, went around the city, loved it. And yeah, said, this is where I'm coming.
So you were in Texas with the last name Houston. Do you plan to change your name now that you're here to Olympia or something? Are you related to like Sam Houston? Like, why? How do you have the name Houston while living in Texas?
That's one of those questions. Like when you ask a black person, it's very much like, you know what? There probably is at some point. That's he's probably like hidden with his family. Don't know.
I don't know. People actually have the name Houston. I'd only seen it in textbooks. Like, well, I guess there may be. I'm trying to think. Is there a famous Houston? Oh, Whitney. Yeah. Well, that blew my whole thing. Whitney Houston.
No relation.
No relation? You sure?
No, I wish.
We're going to have to hear your singing voice so that we can prove or disprove our theory. No, just kidding.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Okay. So you moved here. You liked it. Were you politically active before coming here?
Yes-ish. So I really got involved in politics and kind of governmental interactions when I was a student. So I joined the student government as a representative for the architecture school, mostly as a way to prove people wrong about architecture students, because many people at the university thought that we were just recluses and we stayed in our buildings and were up all night and no one knew who we were. And I wanted to say like, no, like we're actually a part of the university and really involved and engaged. And then what happened is the beginning of a long trend for me, which is AGH doesn't shut up. And I say that because if I ever see something wrong, then I will call it out as such. And I'm not going to be quiet about it. And so the thing that I noticed when I was a student government representative was that the city pretty much forced students to only live in two or three different neighborhoods in Austin. And they had kind of zoned the land, so land use, so that you could build extremely dense. And of course, when you're building new, just like here, it's all luxury, it's all super expensive. Mm-hmm. And had kind of walled off the other neighborhoods from people being able to like build apartments and live in new. And so part of what I did my first couple of years was point out to the city and say, hey, technically in the city charter, it says that students are a protected class. And so you actually need to listen to us and then set up a chain of communication between the university and the city. So that was the first thing that I did. And that kind of, I would say, activism around just rights for housing and protections for renters is kind of just what has now snowballed into me running today. So
that is so needed.
Yeah.
I mean, you're how far out are we? Not to be uninformed, how far out are we from the election of mayor here?
So it feels like a long time, but March has also been moving really quickly.
Okay.
So ballots will come for the primary the last 2 weeks of July. And then.
So this year.
Yes, like really, this year.
2021. Yeah. Is it because of a resigning? Like, how come? Is it always? Is this on track?
Yes.
It is on track? Okay. Yes. So 2 year term, right? Or 4 year? 4 year? 4 year term? 21. I feel like, why would we have elections? Is this purposeful?
So why would you have elections on an off year?
Like, so no one will vote? Like, it's not even a midterm? Like, as if midterms weren't bad enough to go, like, I didn't even know. I was like, oh, we have ballots in the 20. I'm in Shoreline, technically. So I just work in Seattle.
And still, I mean, for example, coming from Texas, in Texas, most of the major races actually happen at the beginning of May because they know that students will be gone by then.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you really have the hardcore voters voting in this, right?
Yes, but I also feel like, especially given the huge surge of involvement, not just in 2018 in those midterms, but then also last year, and especially what I almost call like the 2020 overtime, like it felt like an action film with everyone, including myself, involved trying to get people down in Georgia to vote for those runoffs and how that kind of carried into January. I feel like there's just this new level of energy and involvement where people really understand the connection between voting, or what we like to call as organizers, electoral politics, and how that is just one piece, but a necessary piece to organizing and making change happen.
Okay. I'm trying to think what people, I don't know. I get torn about what I feel like people should know about somebody being elected and what's private. Like, what do you feel should be, like, Samantha's a podcast host and she don't tell us anything.
You're torn, like, about that, huh, Mr.
I'm wondering, is it podcast host Samantha Run level privacy? Is that what a mayor should get? Or, like, how much should we know about you as a person? Like, should we know?
Well, I think for any candidate that you really want to ask them the deep and tough questions that you feel like you would want to know about someone that is supposed to help you.
Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, so you get to be like an actor. You can be asked questions that aren't legal for other jobs, right? Like, I can ask you if you have a family, right? Because I can't ask you if we were working if I was trying to get you at AMC, I can't ask.
Yeah, because technically this is a job interview, and that's definitely the way that I'm thinking about it. Yes, there are lots of great candidates, which I can say, just compared to some of the other, let's say, just like their CVs of the other people running currently for mayor, all pretty high quality. But at the same token, it's about finding the right person for the job at the right moment. So
how many are there running right now? Do we know?
Let's see. Well, we just got another one today.
Your hat is official, right? You are an official candidate, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
I want to say today we're officially at a baker's dozen. So 13.
13.
Wow.
What?
Do you have to raise? Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I mean, this is going to be a dumb question, but, like, do you have to raise a bunch of money to run for mayor? Like, do you have to do, like, a ton of PR and a bunch of, like,
$500 plate dinners,
just to, like,
right?
Throw your hat in the ring, kind of.
Are you a $500 plate dinner kind of person, or is it like fundraising at Popeyes?
Oh, no. Okay, Popeyes is great though.
Yeah.
I love Popeyes. But also Ezel's.
And
good local. Gotta go local for me. Gotta go local. Always gonna support local. I definitely have been fundraising quite a bit. That is definitely taking some getting used to, for sure. Asking people for money repeatedly. Though the way that I always kind of operate in general is bringing just transparency and honesty to it. So whenever I do call someone asking for money, I just tell them straight up, this is exactly why I'm calling. This is why I need this help now, your donation. This is exactly what it's going to go towards. And so I think in that way, just kind of similar just to what I want to do as mayor, is just be like, look, I'm going to tell you exactly that I'm going to do something. I'm not going to try and fuss this up or try and, like, gloss over the fact that, like, yes, we're here having this conversation because it's pretty much transactional. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like someone who needs to kind of play a role that's different from who I am in order to, one, get the job, but then also be great at that job.
Okay. So, but you're, as someone, do you feel like you have a disadvantage being somewhat newer to Seattle? Like, will people go like,
yes,
well, why should I vote for you? You're not even from here, yo. Like, I don't even talk to my neighbor who's lived there 20 years.
It's just a problem.
Why would I talk to you? I know. Are you going to, like, what is it? What is it about you that makes, why should, instead of voting for a person that's been here their whole life, how do I know you love this city and you're not just Antifa coming in to destroy it? Right. Could happen.
It's funny because you say that, and there,
like, and then there's people that think it's serious. Yeah.
Like, yeah, there were actual people.
They're
like
going to use this clip on OAN. They're going to say, see, oh, they're calling them out right there. What?
Hey, that's more visibility.
Do you love, I mean, I guess that's a big question. Do you love Seattle?
Yes.
Okay. What is it about Seattle that you love?
Oh my gosh, Silas is like the father of Seattle right now, and he has to check your intentions with his daughter. What is it about the city that you love? Are you making a lifelong commitment? I'm a liberal,
so I don't have a shotgun.
I am making, I would say, a pretty significant lifelong commitment. I know the one thing that I'm talking about for sure is that I'm not interested in just running for one term. I'm running essentially as a two-term candidate.
Okay.
Saying that,
that'd be a change.
I'm really committed to I'm committed to really working through a lot of our tough issues here, especially homelessness, especially someone who has been a lifelong renter. And I know it's going to take more than just 4 years to get that right. Mm-hmm. At the same token, as someone who has grown up essentially my entire life dealing with global warming / a climate change / now climate crisis, and the fact that the wildfires get longer and more intense every single year, that there's a lot of work that needs to be done on that end. And that's kind of why I'm running now in this moment, is that there's a lot of significant work that's really technical and the really boring stuff around architecture, which is my day job, policy, and really addressing environmental racism, essentially. And so it's pretty boring, mm-hmm. and it's really technical, and it's not the stuff that anyone really wants to talk about, but I'm doing this specifically because I love this city and I'm committed to Seattle being the amazing progressive place that everyone says it is. Because I feel like right now we make a lot of empty promises, and so it's time to keep those promises.
So good.
What?
Thank you.
What's your favorite spot in Seattle to go just chill out? And pretend there's not COVID.
Yeah, right now.
You can't go anywhere.
It's the side chair in the living room. The one with the throw. My favorite place.
Well, yeah,
right
so
now.
I'm a high risk individual. So like all I do is I walk around my apartment when I walk around, or if I get up super early.
So everyone's vaccinated.
I thought you meant you walk around everyone's your apartment like in it like laps.
Hey, that's nothing wrong with that, Samantha.
There's enough space at least to move. I'm fortunate for that.
COVID, everyone's vaccinated. We're going back to normal. Where's the first place you go in Seattle to enjoy?
Ooh, where do I go? I go to Hinghe Park in the International District.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember which one that is. I go to places and I'm like, not even sure.
It's the one with the really nice sculptural, like, red arch that's made of metal.
Okay. Yeah.
And then usually some people play like chess or like ping pong.
Ooh. Do you play chess?
I know how to play chess. You know, I did watch Queen's Gambit, which was excellent.
Okay, that's close enough. Like that's pretty much. Did. Yeah. No.
Right. Right.
No.
Yeah. We all learned chess. Just like, totally. I can play chess right now. I can play a game of five at one. It's me and five toddlers. I crush every time. It's just
whoa.
Yeah. It's virtual though, because you know, we got to be safe with the social distancing.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
So I have a bunch of questions here from our listeners.
Oh boy. Okay.
Are you ready? Some are a little harder. I would like to disclaim that I seriously, these are questions on my Facebook page, public. They are not from me. They do not represent Black and a Half.
Okay.
I just don't want people suing me for when someone asks a question here about the current mayor.
Okay.
Louis Fox wants to know, first off, are you wearing PJ pants right now?
I am not. I am wearing athletic shorts. I'm typically wearing athleisure most times.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Jimmy Sorrentino is asking, his first question. They came from his wife, I think.
Oh, boy. Okay.
What are your opinions on how protesters were treated in Seattle this summer?
Poorly. And I say that as someone who lives within earshot of Cal Anderson Park. And so throughout most of those protests, I heard all of the helicopters going around, the blast balls and the pepper spray being used on protesters. And so it's something that I definitely take to heart. I also do a lot of organizing on Twitter and have done that before I started running. And so trying to help people during some of those protests, knowing that people were really out there for individuals like myself and like y'all who have seen a lot of racial injustice. And so being high risk and not being able to be out there protesting myself, just trying to assist in medical supplies was a big part of it. It was just trying to get people access to care throughout that whole thing.
Okay. The other question they had was, why do you want a job no one has kept for over one term in a long time? What makes you think you can do this?
Well, I feel like I've done a lot of things in my life in general where I was not expected to succeed, and I have, especially being someone who was raised by a single mom who is a public school teacher, coming from a mixed race background. So I'm both Black and Latino. And so being in that space of like not quite fitting into one culture or the other, never really going anywhere where you feel like you belong. I bring that into my architecture practice, which I started my own architecture business. And I've had that now technically coming up on 2 years, even though most of that has been through COVID and so hasn't been as successful, but we're still here, still going. And so for me, it's about recognizing that in terms of what the next leader needs to have in terms of both lived experience, but then also in terms of knowledge to really solve some of these difficult issues, especially homelessness, because there's been a homelessness emergency declared since 2015. And we're now 6 years into this and we don't really have much to show for it, that we need someone like myself, who's an architect, who builds housing, who designs housing, who works through the current permitting process and can really point out all the flaws to be able to really line things up and be frank with people and say, look, these are the things that we can fix right now. This is how we can close the gap a little bit. But then also when it comes to really making a concerted effort to get people into housing, because that's how we're going to help a lot of these individuals who are currently unhoused, it's going to take time and it's going to take assistance from the state and federal level. And so, yes, it's an extremely difficult job, but I feel like, one, if I don't use the knowledge that I have, then I'm not doing my part for my community. And two, my climate anxiety will not let me do otherwise. And that's kind of the end of it.
Nice. Okay. Let's see. David Nance asks, okay, is that a, David, you gotta like form a complete sentence when you write. He wrote homeless cops getting people back into downtown but in a way that's equitable, question mark.
Oh, I don't know what that makes
sense.
Is it?
That makes sense. I feel like a
verb is missing or something.
No, what's your opinion on like how are you going to reform cops or your opinion on that? Homelessness, and then what about people actually getting to have a livable housing situation?
You've talked about homeless, so you don't need to go on there. But
so basically just like housing first approach towards unhoused neighbors. When it comes to the police, I want us to really talk about public safety and that being separate from just police. So as I have been talking about it, 100% public safety, less than 50% of that being the police. And then when it comes to revitalizing downtown, one of the big efforts I want to do is actually have more people live downtown, because I think one of the big problems that we have is that it's not a complete neighborhood. In other words, after about 6 o'clock, it's pretty empty, like even before COVID. And so in order for it to have the same kind of energy that other neighborhoods have around Seattle, we need more people actually living downtown.
You know, let me ask, because someone's going to want to know, are you a defund the police candidate?
Yes.
Yes.
And I'm the only one.
Really? I thought there was another, someone else was complaining about someone else. I don't know if they're a candidate. Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you if this sounds the way. I feel like something was blowing up here. I was describing it like this. I said, in order to, when you're decluttering a house, a room, whatever, when you're going to declutter, one of the suggestions they do to declutter your home is to take everything out of the house, box everything up, put it in the garage, mm-hmm. put it in another room, and do not take it out unless you are going to use it. Right? So you put it in there. Mm-hmm. And then if you don't use it in 6 months, a year, you know, you're like, this box can just go away because I don't use anything in here. I don't need it. And I said, for myself, that's what I think about for defunding the police is, and you can't shut down the police department overnight and wait till, okay, well, let's wait till a murder happens and then we'll get a fire squad. But I think it is of stripping everything down and going, okay, well, what do we need them to do? What do we need police to be doing that's only mm-hmm. that they're the ones qualified for this?
And I think that is getting at what I believe the conversation should be, which is not every response to someone in crisis or dealing with an issue needs to be a person with a gun.
Yeah.
There are other ways to deal with those challenges. And right now, we're also not using our law enforcement efficiently because they have to answer to every single problem that there is. And so there's not even an ability for them to be specialized in what they do.
Are you anti-police?
Well, I'm Black. So people, I try to avoid as much as possible.
Right. People will ask that. They'll say, oh, you defund the police, so you're anti-cop. Are you anti-cop in general?
Well, if you're defunding the police and that's supposed to be anti-cop, then yes. But I would say that what we're really talking about is systems versus people. Mm-hmm. And I think in many ways it's similar to racism, because a lot of people will say, well, I'm not a racist. And so my response would be, well, you don't have to be a racist. You don't have to intentionally harm someone in order for there to be a racist impact on them. It's a systemic issue.
I've said many times, I'm not anti-cop. Like, I'm more anti-bad cop, right? But I'm like, I think there's a role for police officering to a degree, to a large degree. Yeah, we got to find homicides and that kind of stuff. We definitely need that. But I'm always like, no, I went to the police academy. Well, some people know that, but not everyone knows. I went to the police academy in California for about 6 weeks, and then I left for a variety of reasons, which will be in my autobiography. But,
wait, why were you there?
Huh? To be a cop.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you know, listen to the show all the time.
More reason for us to have that buddy cop show we've been talking about.
I know.
About.
Mid-20s crisis. I needed a job. I don't know. It was different. I thought I had good experiences with some police, and I thought it was something I could do. I will say, like, I also didn't know how long I wanted to be a detective. I didn't know how long it takes to become one. I didn't know what I was saying. I was like, oh, really? Like, that long? You have to do this part? The whole... Can I just jump street this a little
bit? You approached the mountain, you looked up, you saw how long it would take to get up to the top of the mountain, and you said, maybe not.
It was with a bunch of racist Sherpas on the way, too. So that was like, I don't want to be around these racist Sherpas.
I am curious, and just like, either of you can kind of answer this. It's more rhetorical, but if you have a bad cop and they do something bad, and a good cop knows about it, but doesn't do anything about it, are they still a good cop?
I will say this. My first instinct is to say, no, they're not a good cop. My second thing is, the other part of me goes, I do think it is situational, as far as I understand that there's cops that are like, when they don't know at what level they've walked into. And then there is a fear for their life because you turn someone in, you are a rat, right? Which is, no one else trusts you. People don't want to work with you. I mean, it's easy to tell somebody, well, just quit your job, quit everything you want to do. Without good people sticking it, without people willing to stick through it, to get into the higher positions, you can't, it's almost impossible to eliminate that stuff. So, I think it partly depends on why.
Not necessarily, yeah. I would say like a really simple, easy answer to that, but I bring that up only to say very clearly that in our policing systems now, there's not a really great way for there to be accountability, where someone who is a whistleblower does not then just immediately get like ousted or removed from that group. And so I think it's really important to keep that in mind when we talk about accountability for a group of individuals who we are giving a lot of power, especially when we're giving them firearms. And then many police departments, especially Seattle Police Department, are essentially militarized. Mm-hmm. And so you have a paramilitary out on the streets, and they don't really have any kind of accountability to anyone else. And I think that's the big thing that is we're trying to discuss and trying to engage around when it comes to the defund conversation, saying, currently, there is just no level of accountability for individuals who have an extreme amount of power. And as much as they might have the best intentions, because we're in the system as it currently stands, it's still pretty anti-Black. And so how do we try and make this entire system more equitable? Part of it for us is just removing cops from many different types of situations.
Yeah.
I'd be curious, too, about like training, because I was watching, I forget what show or documentary or news thing, whatever I was watching, we were just talking about the percentage of time that they train to use like the firearms and the weapons and the things that you're saying, like what it was, this one place, it was like 80% of the time or something. And almost no training was for like de-escalating and, or talking things out or psychology or this, that, or the other thing. And, you know, aside of the good or bad conversation, which, well, I think we all know what we think, but it's people are going to do more of what they're trained at. Like, if you spend 80% of your time training one way, you're going to do that thing a majority of the time.
Yep.
That's, I think that's a
state. Especially when you're in a very stressful situation.
Yeah.
That almost seems like a state.
You're going into a, It's an and there are some conversations happening at the state level.
Because I think
and that is something that I definitely, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, just the way other countries do it. Like, I just, the fact, I only stayed in the police academy 6 months, and I was like 3 months away from being a cop, right? With all the powers. Yeah. Like, it's ridiculous. Why, like, it should at least be like getting an AA in something, right? It should be like a 2-year program.
Do you have an associate's degree or Alcoholics Anonymous?
Both. You should be automatically entered into it as well.
But just that there should be a longer period of time and training for someone to become a sworn officer. Yes.
Okay.
Hold on. I can agree with that for sure. Okay. And to your point, I think one of the aspects of any type of policy change to like be more campaigny that I try and bring to any topic is really saying, okay, what is within our power at the city level? What can we change? What do we need to address or kind of organize or coalesce with our representatives at the state level to get those changes to happen? What else do we need from the federal level also that we currently do not have? Because I think as much as everyone wants to talk about Seattle being a democratic city, we are only as democratic as we can be within requiring to have a balanced budget. Because at the end of the day, like, all the numbers have to line up. We can't take on additional debt. But the federal government can. And so one of the big things that I'm looking towards is in these conversations about recovery post-COVID, how much money is coming in for infrastructure? How can we use that to address a lot of our problems? For example, we don't have public restrooms. I would say that's the biggest one. It's like, I don't know about you, but I definitely have walked around the city and really needed to go to the restroom. Oh, yeah. And we'll always either have to buy something, which I have the privilege as a person who has a job and am able to like purchase something so that I can use a restroom, but that's not the case for everyone.
Right.
So that's one example. Another one is during this time of COVID, so many people are having issues with their internet and they're just not able to have true access to what has now become an essential lifeline for so many of the things that we do. And so we need funding in order to create a municipal broadband system. And so ideally, that comes from the federal government as part of this Green New Deal, this just transition. We create more jobs for people here. We are then able to give that as a utility, as a service from the city. And so in that way, really thinking about how do we kind of align all these things together so that we can get something done very quickly and effectively.
Okay. Okay, let's move on from the police. Or, and no, that wasn't police, but that was really, affordability. Well, it's not affordability. Can the mayor do anything about affordability of the city? Is that within your scope?
Yes and no.
I don't feel like you can.
So it really depends on what you're talking about. If you're talking about housing affordability, yes, we can focus more money to create publicly subsidized housing. We can also reduce the cost of housing by making permitting easier. And so that's something I'm definitely interested in, especially coming from architecture and having to sit through a design review meeting, which if you've ever heard of design review or ever sat through one of those meetings, I promise. Yeah. If you go to one, you never want to go to another one.
I used to work at an architecture firm, so. Very familiar.
Samantha, I will recommend just going to one. Just sitting and just, that's all I can say. So I want us to really align our priorities, which are we're in a housing crisis. Mm-hmm. Housing is way too expensive. And a big part of that is just because we don't have enough housing for everyone.
Yeah.
The number that I think about is this number from the King County homeless or housing authority, which essentially has said that we need 261,000 new apartments or homes at everywhere from zero to essentially like the average median income here in order to address our current need for affordable housing. So not even for future use, but for what people need right now in order not to be cost burdened. So closing that gap in two ways. One is just like building more housing at every single level, recognizing that when it comes to what's called permanent supportive housing, so basically people who are not able to have a full-time job for whatever reason, whether it be within their physical ability or not, that we provide those funds and then let the market or just like private developers kind of take care of the top end. And then when it comes to making housing more affordable, the easiest way is actually just to give people more money. And so I am currently looking into how do we raise the minimum wage from what it is currently now, but also do so balancing some of our other priorities so that we can reduce the overall cost of operating a business in Seattle. So in that way, we're not putting extra pressure on our small and local businesses, but we are giving people more money so that they can afford more home, essentially.
Okay.
That's great. Yeah. Cause it's just crazy how much the price has gone up in the last few years.
Yep.
Like it's like, I know we all talk about this, but it's absurd. It's like, and then even if people do get a raise, it's not enough to match the housing.
No,
I mean, it's the increase. It's not enough to match. So it's just.
Yeah. And the thing that I talk to people about is it's extremely easy for a company like Amazon to say, we're going to hire 5,000 people in 1 year. It's a lot harder for an entire city to say, we're going to build 5,000 new homes in 1 year. Yeah. Whenever you have like a huge influx of people and we're not able to respond in kind with housing, that's where the numbers just get driven up so quickly.
I'm by daytime, my undercover career is I'm a real estate agent. And what's interesting is what I find interesting is I talk to agents in other cities, and when they're having trouble finding someone a house, they start talking to them about, well, we could go with new construction because new construction can be cheaper. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? If you want a new construction here, that's like buying a PlayStation 5. It's not reasonable, right?
Yeah.
It's not that's not cheaper than buying a home. But in other cities, apparently in the country, like, no, a new construction can be cheaper than buying a used.
Oh, for sure. But I think the other aspect of that is that they are essentially doing something which, similar to me back in Texas, you drive until you qualify, is what they say. So basically, you go further out and further out and further out. And that in itself is not sustainable, both environmentally,
right.
but also even mentally.
And we don't have public transportation. I mean, part of it is I discovered back in the day when I was a Lyft driver, we have a very,
I like, this is the episode where you talk about all your other jobs. We should do it.
I discovered that this was, we have a unique city as far as,
I think we got to five right now.
Handling all of the water in the middle of the city. Apparently not most cities you don't have to deal with that. There's only like two roads to get places because, oh, otherwise there's a lake in the way. So you gotta, like, you can't do that. Like so when Lyft first started, they had to make special programming so that you wouldn't get requested in Bellevue and you were in Sandpoint because the distance wise, it's not that far. Like, yeah, if I had a jet ski,
what you have,
you get a jet ski.
Yeah, like you can't.
Oh man,
I can't get over.
I want to say there are.
You get like the Ride the Ducks mobile for your
six bridges. Yeah,
like between north and south, because you have Ballard, Fremont, the Aurora Bridge. So you have those three, and then the other three are I-5, the University Bridge, and then the Motley Bridge. And those are the six ways that you can go from north to south and south to north.
But it's not realistic if you're heading down from Linwood into Seattle. You can't like, oh, I'm just going to go over to Ballard and take that bridge over. Like, no, yeah. You're not. Yeah. So we have crazy house. There's some.
But I do want us to have more options. Like,
Oh no!
Wait, what happened? Like he just cut out. Hold on. Let me pause this. Okay.
I was just about to get into transit and say like
transit. Oh, yeah. Tell me about your transit because that's another huge thing.
Yeah. So a big aspect of my plan to get us to have a lot of action my first year is to essentially restore bus service to what it was before COVID. So ideally we start that process in 2022. We put buses back on the ballot that fall in order to fully restore back to 100%. And then in 2023 or 2024, have a countywide measure so that in Seattle, we can, throughout the entire county, we can build out what's called the Metro Connects plan. So there's actually a plan to give frequent service across the entire King County. And so it would be a huge improvement for everyone, including yourself and Shoreline, Silas. Mm-hmm. And then in Seattle, because we would have this increase in funding, we can move to have every single person within the city have 15-minute or better bus service for at least 12 hours out of the day.
Okay. Does that put all our eggs in the... Well, I mean, I know we have the transit trains coming.
Light rail?
The light rail, yeah. But is that... Are buses gonna cut it? Are we gonna have like?
Is our bus not sexy enough for you?
No, I'm just like I'm always shocked how many people don't take the bus.
Ah,
and how do we get that cultural shift to it being like people complain about? My daughter was saying like, the scary people are on the bus. So I was like, no. It's fine. Don't worry so much about it. But
there are.
Yeah.
I mean, depending on where you are.
And but personally, also, like, I hate the transit police because I hate the idea that we pay $80,000 per cop or whatever to try to find people that are skipping a dollar bus fare.
There's a lot in there.
They don't check for safety as well.
Do they?
Nope.
They're basically checking for fare. I don't see them busting people for fare.
It's usually fare enforcement.
Yeah.
Hmm. But so to kind of pull all that together a little bit. So we need a cultural shift. And a big part of that is just our current system is not sustainable and it hasn't been for a long time. Even before COVID, you looked at the overall like greenhouse gas emissions for us to get like super technical and hopefully no one glazes their eyes over at this point.
No.
But 50% of all emissions in the city of Seattle are specifically from people driving their cars. So not buses, not freight. And we know that we're a huge port city. Not even buildings. It's all from people driving their cars is one half of our pollution. And so we need people to simply drive less in general. So it's going to be a combination of things. It's going to be moving people to buses, making that easier, making people find that choice to be easier than driving. Two, putting things that people need every single day by where they live. So in other words, allowing or more of your corner stores, more of your cafes, more grocery stores to happen in every single neighborhood that people can then choose to walk, bike, or roll to those places as opposed to driving.
Yeah.
And then again, other types of mobility. So whether that be more light rail, whether we finally put in all the bike lanes that we keep saying that we're going to have, but then never actually build. Those are all things that we can do to make people choose those other options as opposed to simply driving by themselves in a car.
What our friend Tony Daniel has a suggestion of, what if we I can't say it with a straight face. We used to have a joke, Tony Daniel, comedian local, had a joke about turning express lanes into drunk driving lanes, where you just put, you pad them up and on each side and just listen to go. I was gonna try to ask it with seriousness.
Hey, you know what's safer than a padded car? It's a bus.
Yeah.
You just get in the bus.
If you have look at
too
that.
Many to bring drink, you take the bus home.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
My consultant's gonna be so happy.
Yeah. And then also, you know, like you were saying, with more of the affordable housing, people aren't gonna have to drive so far every day to commute. They might actually be able to afford someplace closer to where they work. Less greenhouse, whatever. less gas, you guys.
Less gas.
What do you think are the biggest positives and negatives of the current mayor and/or city council? Do you have any positives? I can't see your face because it's frozen now, but
yeah, it's been frozen for a while.
That's okay.
Oh no.
So if yeah, my weird faces are just trying to avoid eye contact with your frozen image.
Okay. Let's see.
I don't know if there's anything we can do about that.
Maybe. We'll see. Is it any better? I don't know. We'll figure it out. Positives. Well, to just gloss over city council very quickly. So I am actually currently the interim policy manager for council member Teresa Mosqueda. And so I can't really get into that a lot.
Yeah.
Because okay. I'm not.
Yeah.
No, too, I know. But
I get that.
The one thing that I can say about council in general is that they are all committed to making the city even better than it currently is. And so they're all doing what they're doing with the best intentions. And so I think that's something to keep in mind. When it comes to our current mayor, I think going back to something you talked about earlier, Silas, about why should people vote for you if you have not lived here your entire life? I would say that the current mayor is an example of you can live here your entire life and not necessarily have the best intentions for your community.
Touche.
And
so true.
I say touche to you, sir.
Because like, where is the here that you lived and what is your life experience? No, I'm just agreeing.
What Maelstrom Pullman asks, will you lie for the cops like our current mayor does? We can't.
I lie for no one.
Huh? You lie for no one? Oh, good. Good.
Yeah, that is. Yep. Good answer.
I can tell them asked and answered. Check out Black and a Half.
There you go.
This is interesting. How will you address hate groups like We Heart Seattle that are targeting vulnerable populations? I've never heard of this group.
Wait, what's that group called?
We Heart Seattle.
We Heart Seattle. This is the thing where
holy crap, I think I own that domain. I swear I bought that years ago.
What?
I gotta look it up.
Seriously?
Did I lose it?
Who do they hate?
I don't know. I was gonna use it for like a
people.
What if somebody was clowning on you, Silas?
Live in homes. They're not. They have been messaging that they are committed to helping the homeless. And in many cases, they have kind of taken the role of sweeping homeless out of our parks in a way that the police are no longer allowed to do because council defunded that. So
they're not are they a hate group? Probably not officially designated, I'm guessing.
Not yet.
They're doing mean things though, like under the guise
of
being helpful.
Of helping.
I had no idea.
It's very new. It's very new. So.
Okay. I don't know how I like, here's a, it sounds like a good question, but I don't know how you would answer. How will you balance the needs of all your constituents, including homeowners, renters, businesses, and more vulnerable and underrepresented communities?
See, I find that question interesting because most likely it came from a homeowner. Because they're just like, why are you balancing the needs of everyone?
Well, I will say it is from a homeowner. I know I helped them. I did help them buy a house, but they they are also a very woke homeowner who understands that it's renters have needs and not everyone can buy and stuff. Like they're like me. Look, I'm in the business of real estate and buying and selling.
I mean,
and
technically I am too.
I hate what's going on right now. I hate that most of my friends don't feel like they can buy anything. Like,
That's part of why I decided to run in the first place, is that there should be more options for people who want to purchase a house or purchase any kind of home within the city of Seattle to be able to afford to live here. I have already had a number of friends who have moved up to Shoreline, have moved out to Bothell, have moved down to Auburn just because they can't afford to purchase anything within the city. And for most of them, they work remotely right now, which is fine, but that's going to end sooner rather than later. And so one, it really bums me out just personally because I'm not going to be able to see my friends like I used to. They don't just live down the street like they were before. But also I think about particularly my generation, Generation Y, and the ones afterwards of, you know, we've been really taught, like, as long as you work really hard, then you're just going to be able to achieve whatever you want in life. And as the system currently stands, that's just not possible. And I feel like, especially for myself, someone who has started my own business and gone to a university and got a professional degree and have a professional license, and then a pandemic doesn't care about any of those things. We are all kind of in the same place of just trying to get by. And what has been so clear from COVID-19 is that we are still in this place of the haves and the have-nots. And there's a huge chasm between those. And so in terms of answering that question, what I would say is, yes, I am definitely keeping and considering the perspective from a lot of different people, and especially being someone who has such an intersectional identity, I think about that a lot. On the same token, when it comes to my policies, I want them to be progressive and equitable in a way where we are improving the lives of those who have it the hardest currently first. Because in terms of what we should be doing to improve the city, I believe that when we do lift up those people, and that's also part of the reason why my campaign is called The Rising Tide, is I want to build a rising tide that lifts all boats, but that it's going to start from the bottom and work its way up. And when we do that, when we move and support our community, especially those with the least, we will all then benefit from that.
That's so true.
Did you want to speak at all on, you mentioned intersectional identity.
Yeah.
Did you want to speak on that at all for what people, is there anything people should know? Do they need to? Do they have
that? I think, again, talking about my mixed race background, but also that I'm queer, so I'm bisexual, I identify as bisexual. And so, again, being in a place of not necessarily belonging in a number of different spaces, but then, of course, just trying to make space. And I think in many ways, there are probably a lot of Seattleites who say, well, who the hell do you think you are running? And you haven't been here long enough. But I think in many ways, the mayor needs to be thinking not just of Seattleites past or present, but also of the Seattleites that will be coming in the future. And so in that way, it doesn't matter how long you've lived here, or how long you've been working, you need to have the plan in place and concrete steps to achieve those goals to be able to improve the city for every individual who either is currently living here or will live here in the future. And so that's what I plan to do.
Okay. The other questions I think you basically have covered during this that I said that.
All right.
But before you get out of here, you have got to answer.
Okay.
The Black and a Half world famous seven questions.
Seven questions. All right.
Seven questions heard around the world. Okay. And these are the first thing that comes to your mind. There's not a really wrong answer. Whatnot. Number one, what are you most nerdy about?
Anime.
Anime. All right.
Yeah. You said nerdy anime.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Do you have a favorite anime that you can?
Ooh, if you want to get super cerebral, that would be Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Okay.
Which is a really good one. It talks a lot about interpersonal relationships, and there's a lot of robots. That's great.
Love robots. Hey, that might get you some votes right there, honestly, in this town. What's something that
I can make a commitment right now? Because I don't think I've talked about this publicly. So I do have this plan that if I am elected mayor, I will show up to Emerald City Comic Con cosplaying as a mayor.
Okay.
I can commit to that.
You commit to that. I love it. I love it. A Black and a Half exclusive right here. First time. Number two, what's something that you love to eat?
Ooh, ice cream. Favorite
kind.
Yeah, flavor.
Ooh, I'm going for a classic flavor. It's got to be cookies and cream.
Okay.
But I am definitely the person who goes to a shop and will try whatever is seasonal. Like, I definitely like to try new things. I'm a huge foodie. Go check my Instagram. And so,
yes, I'm not going to, some other locals would ask you to pick a favorite ice cream shop in town. I'm not going to let that divide the votes for you. Thank you. I won't do that to you. Do you like the weird stuff though? Like not weird, but like, strawberry balsamic, like a new mix that you
wouldn't
find in the store. Okay. I like that. What's something that you love to drink?
Gin.
Gin. Okay.
And beer. I'm a huge beer person.
What kind?
Like a light beer or a weightier meal beer?
Yes, I was on opposite sides of this one.
I'm all over it. I'm all over it, lady. I don't know what you're talking about.
Really? Okay, do you like lots of different kinds, and I feel like, again, it has to do with the season. Like when it's hot, I would love like just like a rice beer, or a goza is great when it's like really hot, like the more citrusy sour beers. Okay. I do like IPAs, and in the fall, saisons. Gotta have those.
See, you know what I like about that answer? I like that because it is situational, right? Oh, like someone, other candidates might just say, "Oh, I'm a Hefeweizen." Like that's it. That's all they drink. But no, it depends on what am I eating with it? What's the weather like? There's a whole bunch of other things that go into it. There's not just one stock answer.
Yeah, no.
You have to. There's more to it, and I love that. I believe that you actually drink beer instead of other people. I'm like, you know, whatever. Yes. What kind of music do you love?
I love pop music. And I think a lot of people may see that as basic. But the reason I like it is because you're taking something that is essentially the same formula and you have to innovate it every single time. Because it's typically the same verse, chorus, verse, chorus. And then you have your bridge, and then you have the chorus again. And from there, you've had millions and millions of songs covering so many different emotions and different experiences. And especially someone, my mom likes to joke that I started singing before I started talking. Music has always been a big part of my life.
Okay. Might have to get karaoke fundraiser going on.
Oh, I love karaoke.
Okay.
Like,
that'd be cool. That'd be fun.
Crescent Lounge.
Press Lounge? What?
Crescent Lounge.
Crescent Lounge? Sounds familiar.
Yeah, on Summit. Or Olive.
Okay. I've never done it there. I've never done karaoke there.
Oh, it is great. It is. I love bars, but I love specifically dive bars that are holes in the wall. That is what the Crescent Lounge is.
Years
ago.
Yes. I've never done karaoke there. I have done stand-up comedy there. Used to be an open mic there. That was my introduction to open mics in Seattle, was the Crescent Lounge. And I was like, what have I got myself into? I don't what is this?
Pretty nice there.
Ooh, it's an experience. Okay, what do you love to create?
Maps. Yeah. Actually, I have a huge transit fantasy map that I made. I can probably send it to you later. It's pretty awesome. I like that.
Maps. I love that.
For Seattle. Yeah.
I don't know why when you said it, though, I suddenly got Dora the Explorer in my head. the map. You can tell I have kids because that's what pops.
Yeah, I was going to say.
If you didn't have kids, that'd be a little
creepy. Okay. What's a game you love to play?
Texas Hold'em.
Ooh, okay. Because of the Texas.
I enjoy card games. Right.
Okay, last question. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
For leaving this city better than it was before.
Wonderful. Andrew Grant Houston, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Silas. Thank you, Samantha. This was great.
Well, yeah, lovely awesome. For being our first mayoral candidate of 2021.
Yep.
But of 2021 on here. And for full, you know, because we're media, by law, if any other candidates want to come on, we have to provide equal access.
You do. They just won't be as cool as me.
They probably won't be. Houston, we have a problem. You are the coolest guest we've had. You've probably heard that too many times, huh?
It's not the first time, and it won't be the last.
It won't be the last. Stand by to receive the transmission. But Silas pulled out the hack joke. Stand by.
I had no part in that.
For old time's sake. I miss comedy.
And so did that joke.
That was good.
Black and a half. That was a great ending there. That's good. They're mending it there. Samantha burning me. Okay. Live long and prosper.